We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are starting to get to the point where we are no longer talking about weeks. We are starting to talk about just days to the NFL draft. We know where these prospects land and line up. But in this time, in I believe 2 weeks, we are going to be in a situation where we have certainly got through the first round of the NFL draft. And you'll be able to know where these quarterbacks have landed, where the top end prospects at the wide receiver position have landed. And it's going to give us the information in terms of draft capital of what is really going to affect the landscape of the NFL. But for our consideration here, fantasy football, where do the quarterbacks land? Do we get the perfect landing spot? We'll talk about that in today's show and how do things play out? How does it affect those skill positions? Which teams are trying to set themselves up to best serve that rookie quarterback when they come in to have success immediately and much, much more? We're going to talk about all that on today's RotoViz Overtime. We're going to talk about the big three quarterbacks. Can somebody sneak their way into that? Should it be a big four? Should it be a big two? Who? We even go as far as to have a little bit of fun and guess who could, you know, head their way to the Hall of Fame in, you know, 20 years time from now. So lots of fun conversation coming up. Who are game managers? Who are difference makers? We're also going to talk a little bit about the tight end. So that is going to be fun coming up in a little moment with Matt Hicks, who you can follow over on Twitter at the FF_educator. You can check him out as well on YouTube, or they do have a Twitter account as well for the Rookie Big Board. You can check all that out, all the information on that in today's show notes as well. But as we kick things off, I mentioned the NFL draft just around the corner. The RotoViz Rookie Guide will also be available for that third edition post NFL draft. Edition one, edition two available now. Second one came out post the combine. You'll be able to check out all of Sean's, Blair's, Dave Cabin's, and also Curtis Patrick's thoughts over there in the Rookie Guide. If you haven't checked it out already, lots of positive feedback. But as I mentioned, the third edition will be coming out post the NFL draft. So if you want to check that out, again, information in today's show notes if you want to go and get yourself a copy of that. But I know people want to talk about the tight ends and the quarterbacks, so let's get straight into it. Let's talk about tight end now. And it's not on the show sheet, but Sean, I feel like we've, you know, the consensus is obviously that
Bowers is so good. I don't feel like there's a need to ask anybody about it.
But I'm sure that the people listening to the show, they know he's good, but they're like, why is nobody talking about this, you know, elite tight end option coming in? It's just we've skipped over him. He doesn't
exist.
Should
Bowers be the overall 101 in your super flex draft, ahead of the quarterbacks, ahead of the wide receivers? I mean,
Sean, that's coming in pretty hot.
No, it's not. He's that good. Let's make the case he's that good. Matt, what do you think?
What's the premium? It's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's tight end premium, super flex. I mean, if you got 15 years of Travis Kelce, you would definitely prefer him over all of the other guys in the draft. Is that what we're going
to
get?
We're trying to see, will we just measure his gold jacket now? Is that what we're doing? He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Here's where I'll go with Brock Bowers. This is where I guess I'm willing to emphasize how valuable I think he is. My dynasty ratings, my Devy rankings, my rookie rankings, they're all on an equivalent ranking scale. So when you put up Brock Bowers against the dynasty tight ends, it's Sam Laporta and then it's nobody else above Brock Bowers right now. So I think he comes in as an immediate, you know, top three dynasty tight end. And I think that production is going to be right there from his rookie season. So, you know, there's a reason that it's almost like we don't need to talk about him because he's the full package, especially when we're talking about fantasy production.
Yeah, and I guess if you were comparing him to the wide receivers in this class, if he was wide receiver eligible, would he be in the conversation with those other two top end wide receivers as the wide receiver one?
I think I think you can make a conversation for Malik Nabers. He's got a really similar value to me for Malik Nabers, but Marvin Harrison Jr., I would still have a scotch above.
Okay, so we're past the point. At least we've talked about Bowers on this episode of the show when we talk about tight end. So that's a step in the right direction. Looking at the other candidates then below him, you have Sanders, Sinnott, Stover, you know, Bell in there as well. How far below Bowers, like what is the gap between those guys and Bowers?
It's a pretty big gap. You know, I mentioned that in terms of the dynasty ranking. So I would have Brock Bowers as tight end 2 in dynasty. Jatavion Sanders is my tight end 16 in dynasty. So, you know, just for reference sake, that puts him, you know, in between Cole Kmet and Michael Mayer. So in that range, it's still a pretty good range to be in, right? And I was high on Michael Mayer last year for sure. I think that if Brock Bowers wasn't in this class, we would be talking about Jatavion Sanders a good bit more because he's the type of tight end that we like for fantasy football. He's got good ball tracking ability. He consistently brings in passes with reliable hands. He's a fluid runner. He's comfortable navigating around the field for a guy who's 6'3", 245. He lines up around the field. So he'll line up split in, he'll line up split out. He'll probably less so line up, you know, with his hand in the ground. I don't think he's going to be much of an inline type guy at the next level. He'll work vertical routes. He'll work post routes. He's got a nice out route. And they'll hit him for targets in the flat too and ask him just to get yards after the catch at Texas. He's very comfortable working through traffic over the middle of the field. He's comfortable taking big hits and holding onto the ball. So I think he's a specific fantasy football the translation is really exciting with Jatavion Sanders. I don't think he's an incapable blocker. You know, he seals the edge well, so I don't think he's going to be a liability there. But I think more often than not, he's going to release on routes instead of staying in to pass block.
One of the things that I ran across as I was using Sports Info Solutions to, you know, break down some other guys, really break down receivers, but I just didn't have tight ends filtered out at that moment, was that on passes between 6 and 19 air yards, so kind of that intermediate depth, he had 30 targets, 0 drops, led all wide receiver prospects with 14 yards per target. That obviously seems pretty good. It goes back to our discussion about the receivers. I mean, is he holding down Worthy and Mitchell in any way, shape, or form? And I mean, obviously, you always want to see people run and test as well as humanly possible. But was there anything about his testing that knocks him down a little bit? Because otherwise, he just seems pretty undervalued in all formats.
Yeah, I think he's just undervalued at this point. You know, the athletic testing, didn't knock him out of the park, but I keep my expectations low for tight ends. You know, I do think he is more of a tight end that can catch as opposed to like a wide receiver tight end hybrid type guy. I do think he is a true tight end. And so that's why for me, the athletic testing didn't set off, any red flags for me. But, you know, going back to the conversation about Worthy and Mitchell, you know, I do think it's worth pointing out that, Sanders did have that rapport with Quinn Ewers before Mitchell got in. So I think the offense was kind of Worthy and then Sanders early on in the year, and Mitchell kind of had to work up to that level of production. But you saw even down the stretch in the college football playoff when Ewers even when Malik Murphy was playing towards the end of the season, when they needed to hit a guy, oftentimes they would look for Sanders in the intermediate. That's a great stat to pull, Sean, because I think that's really validating in terms of how reliable of a pass catcher he is over the middle of the field. And if you look at the way the NFL is moving right now, a pass catching tight end that can be reliable is a super valuable chip in an offense. So oftentimes, you know, doing rookie mocks with different folks out there in the industry or different, you know, patrons or or what have you. I'm not seeing Sanders go off the board often until the third round in rookie drafts, and I'm willing to take him as high as the mid-second because I do think the value's there.
With the tight end group, and you know, I mentioned some names there, but is there anyone that for you is like an intriguing name that's completely going under the radar at this point? Is there anyone outside of those names that I mentioned that you're interested in for those rookie drafts?
Yeah, you know, the two names that I'll give, you know, I like Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State a ton. He's 6'3", 250. He's a physical player. He fires off the line of scrimmage. The man seeks out contact. He's got really consistent hands. He holds on well through contact. He's comfortable catching the ball and gaining extra yards after the catch. I think he's got a solid catch radius. Here's the thing, though, that I'm terrified about Ben Sinnott, and I'm not letting myself fall in love with him. When I watch his game, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting on NFL draft night to hear his name called and have him called as a fullback because he gives off that style, the way that he seeks out contact, the way that he's physical. And of course, you know, if he gets that fullback designation, he's going to get knocked off the radar for us. And then the other guy who I don't think is getting enough hype is Cade Stover. I think Cade Stover is a really well-rounded tight end prospect. I think he's going day two. You know, he's 6'3", 247. He's got great hands. He showed the ability to be a really reliable receiver. There were games where Marvin Harrison Jr. was out for Ohio State, and Cade Stover was the clear top pass-catching option, even with Emeka Egbuka there. He shows good contact balance, running with the ball in his hands after the catch. And Cade Stover is a two-way tight end. You know, he is somebody who can come into the NFL, put his hand in the ground, and be a reliable blocker right off the bat. He's got a nice anchor in pass protection. He's got good range in pass protection as well. And he's able to fire off, you know, and run through his blocks when he's asked to be in a run protection, which I know isn't exciting for fantasy football purposes, but if you can block as a tight end, you're going to get on the field earlier. That could lead to opportunity. So he is somebody who I feel like isn't being talked about quite as much as Bauer, Sanders, or, you know, even a guy like Theo Johnson.
Is Theo Johnson, just because you mentioned him, the athletic testing was impressive, but I mean, the production even relating to his teammates is non-existent, right? I mean, his team didn't think that he was that guy. Is that the right way to look at it, or are there pieces that someone who's just looking at the box score would miss there?
So the context with the Penn State offense is that the Penn State offense has been an absolute mess, and it has been for years. So they just hired, I believe, their fourth offensive coordinator in 5 years. It might be three in 5 years, but they rotate through offensive coordinators. You know, you look at the rest of the players on their team, they're not using Drew Allar well, a five-star quarterback. They're not using Nick Singleton, a five-star running back, very well. And so although you do look at it, and I was disappointed in Johnson's production in his senior year because he was somebody who was higher up in Devy rankings going into the year. I was disappointed, and I had dropped him down because the production was not there. But then you go and you watch the tape, and what you can see from his production, you do see a fluid athlete. So the tape backs up the athletic testing. He's light on his feet. He moves well laterally for a tight end. He's got good hands. He shows the ability to snag off-target passes. So there's not a lot of knocks on his game other than the fact that he just didn't get that many targets. It's tough to look past, but at the tight end position, you're going to have to get creative. You're going to have to be willing to sacrifice something, right, if you want to draft a tight end. And if it allows me to draft him in the fourth round, you know, that feels like a pretty good risk point for me to be at with Theo Johnson.
How quickly are these second-tier guys going to contribute? Obviously, everybody is looking at tight end a little bit differently after what Laporta did. I mean, can we get rookie year production from these players?
The tier two guys, I wouldn't get too I wouldn't get too excited about it. You know, I think the guys that are going to go in tier two, Theo Johnson, Cade Stover, if Ben Sinnott, it does officially get, you know, classified as a tight end, I think he'll go there. And then a guy probably too, like Jaheim Bell, is probably going to work into that. But just keep in mind that tight ends are employed very differently, right? Even if they have high draft capital. So, you know, like Luke Schoonmaker is a great example. Like, folks chased that. And then there was another one that folks chased as well with high draft capital last year. And so it's just about understanding the offense that these guys are put in. You know, I liked Sam Laporta plenty last year. You know, he went to Detroit. He got a nice bump up, but even I could not have projected like that amazing rookie season from Sam Laporta. So a lot of it is usage, but I feel much more comfortable projecting year one production from Bowers and Sanders than I would Stover, Johnson, Sinnott, or Bell.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Transitioning to quarterbacks as we finish things out, we are kind of going to go into the world of... You know, we joked there about Brock Bowers in a gold jacket, but we are about to go into kind of hyperbolic statements here about the quarterback position. The big three, and I'm interested as well in how you would rank those. Let me get your ranking of the top three quarterbacks first.
Yeah, so it's Caleb is, comfortably quarterback one. And then today, all right, early April, it's Drake May, then Jaden Daniels, but it's close. It's very close between those two.
Okay, and then as we move into like predicting short-term upside, who out of those guys is most likely to completely change the way we think about fantasy football over the next three seasons? Who's going to... didn't really change exactly the way we think about fantasy football, but, you know, absolutely kind of wrecked the game last season. We joked about Puka a little bit earlier in the show, but the quarterback position has transitioned a lot in the last decade. Any of those guys though that could see that transition, you know, increase or change even further?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the easy answer is Caleb, but if we are looking for somebody who is going to make immediate year one production, it's hard not to pick Caleb. And it sounds so wild to say, because we are, you know, 6 months removed from the Bears just absolutely wasting away Justin Fields because they wouldn't put weapons around him. And now Caleb Williams is going to be stepping into an offense that has Keenan Allen, that has DJ Moore. Cole Kmet, I think, is a really reliable underneath guy. And with that ninth overall pick, we could very well see another pass catcher added to Chicago, or maybe more importantly, some reinforcement along the offensive line, right? And that's not even counting what the Bears can do, you know, with the rest of their draft capital. So I think Caleb's going to have the opportunity to put up immediate production. Do so in a way that gets people excited. You know, the comparison is Pat Mahomes a lot for him, but it, you know, there will be probably some Mahomes-esque type plays that get folks really excited. So a big part of
his best comparison is just the best player of all time.
Just the best player of all time. Yeah, of course. But in terms of his throwing style, at least. But you know, it's a big piece for me when I factor in my values of players is, you know, how do I anticipate their value will jump, right, once the season starts? Because you look at a quarterback, you look, you know, a guy who's going to produce early on as a rookie, we're going to see him immediately talk. I mean, let's talk about C.J. Stroud, right? C.J. Stroud is a top five, top six consensus dynasty quarterback at this point in time. I think a year from now, Caleb Williams will be in that same conversation, top five, top six, top seven dynasty quarterback. And then the other one, you know, that has that potential is Jaden Daniels, right? You're drafting Jaden Daniels for the ceiling And I like Jaden Daniels a ton. I think he's progressed a lot as a passer over the last two seasons at LSU, being more comfortable in the pocket, adjusting velocity, leading wide receivers with anticipation, being more confident within the pocket itself. But you're drafting him for that dynamic rushing ability, right? That upside. The reason that folks drafted Anthony Richardson for that upside last year as quarterback one in a lot of leagues. That's why you're drafting Jaden Daniels. But I think whether it's Daniels or May, you're going to have more question marks about the situation that they're drafted into. And you're going to have to be more creative when you're projecting out a situation where they finish as a quarterback one in their rookie season.
Yeah, the situation is going to make a huge difference. There's some nice spots for them to land in, but there's also some landmines that they have to skip over. So I think you've answered the question already that's coming up next, but that gold jacket, we're measuring them and we're setting them up. We're sending in the order today. So let's say 20 years from now, we give them a 15-year career. They have the 5 years in between. Who is, you know, the shoe-in first ballot Hall of Famers? Is there more than one, do you think, in this group? Do you think it's that good of a group?
It's J.J. McCarthy. No.
That's the next question.
Yeah. You know, it's easy to say Caleb at this point in time, but we really don't know with quarterbacks, right? I mean, it's baked into the value, you know, the value that we put on these quarterbacks that, you know, at least half of these guys are going to miss. We know that, right, from statistical production, historical production, I should say. But, you know, there's a real chance that at least two of these guys in the class, and I will lump in JJ into that conversation, ends up being, you know, a really successful, like a true franchise quarterback as we're talking about them. And they're going to do it in different ways. You know, I don't want to discount Drake May from the conversation just because I mentioned that Daniels has more upside. I think May comes with some really good floor to his game as well. So, you know, he may be more of somebody who is a 10-year starter and really good as opposed to gold jacket. But the highest ceilings are going to come with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
You're obviously enthusiastic about Williams, as is justified and as, you know, most people are. I've started to get a little bit more concerned that we're actually not going to get the rushing value from him that's necessary to make him a fantasy difference maker, unless you also get just an absolute ton of passing volume. Is that concern justified at all? And, you know, for people who maybe haven't watched, you know, all of their games, understood maybe the trajectory of his rushing, but then also how he got the rushing scores. I mean, one of the things, even this last season, where you don't have a lot of yards, you have a lot of touchdowns. Are we going to get touchdowns from him at the next level? Again, that's going to be difficult to project, but the touchdown number does jump out even as he ran a lot less.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation when it comes to Caleb Williams's game. And, you know, one of the reasons that you will hear Caleb compared to Pat Mahomes a lot, it's not necessarily just, you know, being a world-class athlete. It's the way that he runs. You know, you look at Mahomes, and he's not what you would think of as a traditional rushing quarterback, right? He does rush, and he does get rushing yards, and he does get rushing touchdowns, but he uses his mobility, both Mahomes and Williams, more to extend the play, to open up the pocket. A lot of Caleb Williams is rushing in 2023, especially, was scrambling, was being under pressure, was trying to make something happen with the ball in his hands. I do think an NFL team can be more intentional about that, right? I think an NFL team, you know, he's got the size. So he's 6'1", 214, but, you know, he has that size. He has that rushing ability where you can scheme him up at the goal line, right? Like a Dak Prescott, 6 touchdowns a season. I think that's within the realm of possibility for Caleb Williams. 300 rushing yards, 400 rushing yards. With Caleb Williams, you're balancing that rushing ability with 3,500 passing yards, right? With pushing 30, 32 passing touchdowns. It's got to be both for him, as opposed to a guy, you know, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson can rely a little bit more on that rushing production, even if the touchdowns don't get there. I don't think Williams will have that luxury. So I think that's a really good observation to point out.
So when we go to the second group, and the second group really does seem like it's three players as well, although McCarthy is much likely he's much more likely to go close to the stars than close to Penix and Nix. Starting with McCarthy, when you have a toolsy, efficient player in college, should we be looking at that where we're saying game manager, or does the toolsy efficient element actually make him a candidate for like breakout stardom if he suddenly gets the volume that he didn't get at the NFL level?
Yeah, I love JJ McCarthy. I've been higher on JJ McCarthy, I think, than consensus going well back over a year now. And I think there's a real argument, like you were alluding to make that JJ McCarthy actually has, you know, the second or third highest upside in this class at the quarterback position, because he's done very well at what he's been asked to do, but he hasn't been asked to do all that much. What's most exciting for me is if you look at the mechanical foundation of every quarterback we've talked about or could talk about in this draft class, I actually think JJ McCarthy has the best mechanical foundation of any quarterback in this class. He's got consistent footwork. He navigates the pocket well. He has a good, clean throwing motion, a quick release, and he is mobile. He is athletic. He extends plays. He moves the pocket. He can execute design runs. He's really aggressive when executing design runs. And he came in at 6'2", 219. You know, Michigan had him listed at 197. They never updated his weight going into the 2023 season. So he's got good size to him as well. He's only 20 years old. And so if you put him in an offense where he can distribute, where he can really push the ball downfield to weapons, because I do think he has better arm talent than folks give him credit for as well. I think there's a real opportunity that JJ McCarthy can smash it out of the park. You know, obviously the dream landing spot's the Vikings, right? But if you just consider, we talked about Roman Wilson, right? Roman Wilson was the best wide receiver prospect, and he's a good wide receiver prospect, but he was the best wide receiver prospect that JJ McCarthy ever threw to at Michigan. If you know, send him to Minnesota and all of a sudden he's got Addison, he's got Justin Jefferson, he's got TJ Hawkinson, I mean, he's really going to be able to work the fields. So I'm in on McCarthy. You know, there's a chance that, you know, depending if he goes to Minnesota, there's a chance he's as high as my QB2. You know, he's that close with the other two guys that we've talked about, where he can be in that conversation. Absolutely.
And as you mentioned, the Roman Wilson element there, I mean, how much of Daniels was Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas?
It's a fair question to ask. When you watch Jaden Daniels's game, you see that he's able to really lead those players well. He's able to anticipate where they're going to be. He throws the ball to where they're going to be, not where defensive backs are going to be. So you can watch Brian Thomas and you can say, you know, man, you know, he's burning guys downfield. You know, he's creating a lot of separation for Daniels to lead them downfield to, but he's still got to put that ball on target. He's still got to hit his guy in stride, right? You look at Malik Nabers. Malik Nabers goes up and makes some excellent catches, but Daniels has to know where to put that ball, where Nabers is going to be comfortable getting it. You don't see Nabers needing to over-adjust in the air. You don't see him needing to react to an underthrown ball or turn his head or body fully around. So I do think that having two first-round wide receivers absolutely helps you look like a better quarterback. But the other side of this is, you know, hopefully he's getting high-caliber NFL wide receivers to throw to, and he's going to be able to understand who they are and adjust to that. The one thing that I will say about Jaden Daniels that is impressive for me, it's one thing that I look at when trying to understand the context of the quarterback, right? Because I think that's what we're talking about. What's the context of Jaden Daniels at LSU? Watch the first six games of his 2022 tape, his first season at LSU. He is a horrible passer. He scrambles as soon as he feels pressure. He's uncomfortable with the offense. He's uncomfortable with the game. And then look at the way he gets coached up. He grows. He adjusts to this new scheme. He no longer has to play hero ball because Jaden Daniels had to play 3 years of hero ball at Arizona State. So he grew. He progressed. He adjusted to the offense around him. And every single one of these quarterbacks, when they get to the NFL, they're going to need to adjust to the offense around him. These coaches are not going to purely scheme up around them, right? The expectation is they're going to be able to learn and adjust to that philosophy that they're inheriting. So for me, you know, I could view that as a plus, as much as I am realistic about it and saying, you know, anybody who's thrown to two first-round wide receivers is going to look better.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be a little bit concerned about a guy who's making adjustments from, you know, age 22 to age 23, who's going to be, you know, age 24 in, you know, the end of his rookie year. And yet, I mean, this is a player who, as a freshman at Arizona State, was 17-2 touchdown to interception. And so I guess, at least from that perspective, it encourages me that, you know, in those first two seasons, and the second one obviously impacted by the pandemic, but I mean, 22-3 touchdown to interception, I think that part gives me some hope that it's not all those receivers. So look at these last two guys. And obviously, you've said some bad things about Penix, but one of the things that I think is maybe surprising to me, and maybe it's just that I want to like somebody different than everybody else likes, that you can get in real trouble. Like, if you're personality is telling you to do that, but when you split out a bunch of different important situations for the 2023 season for these top six guys, one of the things that consistently comes up is that once you remove all of those, you know, blatantly underneath targets for Bo Nix, his profile actually looks really good. Still, I mean, it's not something where those are the things that are making him look good. He looks really good. And again, that's compared to the top four guys. And Penix looks really bad. And yet, there's context for these players. And in both cases, they run prolific offenses. Am I right at all to think that Nix is actually doing a lot of things really well once you remove these passes that are probably not going to train? I mean, you could always get an offense where they actually do allow you to do some of that stuff. But are the college numbers and the college results in these important situations, say, you know, third and medium to third and long, passing down the middle of decent air yards numbers, all these types of things where you're like, you get the impression because of the overall ADOT that Nix can't do any of them. And yet, when you actually split those plays out, he looks pretty decent. Accurate or not accurate? I mean, if you're looking for a game manager for the Vikings or the Broncos or the Giants, it seems to me like the Raiders are just looking at a long-term, like, losing environment. But if you're looking at those other teams, I mean, is Nix not potentially the perfect game manager? Or is that, again, just me being like, you know, I would love to like Bo Nix.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally justified with Bo Nix. You know, the word that I use for Bo Nix is command. Like, he has that command of an offense. And I know sometimes we look at this game manager label as a negative label, but it could be a really effective label for an NFL team. And, you know, it could create a really consistent quarterback too for you in your fantasy football lineups. And that's a really important position, right? I think you look at Bo Nix and you, like you said, he was trusted in these situations, in these high pressure situations, and he protects the ball. He's got great decision-making. He doesn't throw the ball into harm's way. He leads his receivers. He puts the ball where only they can get it. And I think those are things that are going to be really valued by NFL teams. But if Bo Nix has inconsistent footwork, if he could just get his footwork down, I'd be, you know, probably shouting about him, because, you know, mechanics for me are a big thing. It's the only thing holding me back. I think he's got enough arm talent. Like I said, I think he's got the command of the offense. I could definitely see a team, you know, the Giants in the second round. You know, if Denver misses in the first round, I could see Denver going after him in the second round. I do think that he's going to get top 50 draft capital. I do think that he's going to get a shot to be a starter in the NFL. So I'm definitely a fan of Bo Nix. And if the conversation is Nix versus Penix, I'm going to take Nix, you know, 10 out of 10 times.
Are there any things that the Penix is doing that do give you some hope? You know, especially if you get into a situation where the team maybe is not as incentivized to keep him healthy, because really what they want is his top end, not like, we have to have you to make a run at the national title like Washington did.
Yeah, I hate to say that there's not a situation where I see him being successful, but I really struggle with his projection for a few reasons. Well, I'll start. You know, he's got a great deep ball. That's always great, right? You can push the ball downfield. He throws probably better than anybody in the class in terms of both arm strength and accuracy. You know, this is Joe Milton line there, and accuracy, you know, the best deep ball in the class. He can push it 50, 55 yards downfield. That's going to create some big play potential. That's going to create some home run play potential. And within the pocket, he's got a great sack avoidance rate. I think that's where his mobility comes in. That's where you can see his athleticism on display. So I think that's the upside for Michael Penix. But besides just the lack of actual rushing ability, Michael Penix has an incredibly elongated throwing motion, which he got away with at Washington because they had one of, if not the best offensive lines in the country. If he gets put in Las Vegas, man, he's not getting that time. And with that, if he has to speed up his throwing motion, his accuracy is going to drop off even further than it is right now. It's going to lead to inconsistencies. So when you plug Michael Penix into a spreadsheet to make him a quarterback one, you're going to need about 4,000 passing yards. You're probably going to need 35 passing touchdowns. And it's just hard for me to see a scenario where he's going to get there. So, you know, I really struggle with him as a projectable fantasy football quarterback.
Awesome stuff. That wraps us up on our quarterback tour. We've had a lot of fun conversations over these episodes with Matt coming on. And again, as always, I want to thank him for coming on. You can check him out on Twitter at the @FF_educator, also at the Rookie Big Board. And you can find out all the stuff he's got going on. But Matt, before we close out here, let the listeners know what you've got going on. A lot of this stuff is already up and available, obviously, ahead of the draft with the profiles you've done. But have you anything planned before the draft, or is it more a case to check out those profiles that you've already posted?
Yeah, lots of good stuff coming out. You know, Rookie Big Board on YouTube, on your favorite podcast provider. Plenty of rookie profiles, mock drafts. We got a few sleeper episodes coming out. And then we'll have volume two of our rookie guide out the Sunday after the NFL draft. So that's available over at patreon.com/rookiebigboard. So lots of content, however you want to access it.
Awesome. And we're always, as we mentioned at the start of this, excited to have you on the show. But it is, a valuable resource for us. I know it's a valuable resource for the OT listeners as well. So fantastic stuff. Sean, anything to add in before we close things out?
No, I enjoyed it so much. I really appreciate your time and, you know, love hearing you work through the questions. And again, always love having the draft experts on so I can round out my understanding of some of these players. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. So we will leave it there. Appreciate you, Matt, for coming on. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter @OverTimeIreland. My co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out Sean's work up on rotoviz.com. And until we are back, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @Rotoviz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.